It's finally spring in Pennsylvania. Birds are singing. The neighbors are cutting the grass. Daffodils are in bloom. Farmers are planting corn. The dogwoods are starting to bud. It's springtime too for the hemp industry here in Pennsylvania. There's a lot of things starting to bud. This is the Lancaster Farming Industrial Hemp Podcast. I am your host, Eric Herlock. And on today's show, we're going to go inside one of the local hemp industry buds. Literally inside of it. Yep, inside a bud of the local hemp industry. Okay, so yesterday I recorded this interview inside the Hemp House on Wheels, or what will become the Hemp House on Wheels. Right now, it's still in its bud stage. It's yet to bloom. The Hemp House on Wheels is a special collaboration between two local businesses connected by hemp. The first is Coexist. It's a design and build company in Blandon, Pennsylvania, in Berks County. And the other is Amerishandra, which is a cast hemp and hempcrete company from nearby Allentown. And so yesterday, I sat down with the three principals of these two companies. Anastasia Konopitskaya, her husband Drew Oberholzer, and Cameron McIntosh. And so when this hemp house bud blooms into a hemp house flower, what it's going to be is this mobile showcase of hemp's building potential. And you can see for yourself, because it'll be on display next month in New York City at the Cannabis World Congress and Business Exposition in the Canopy Growth booth. So we conducted the interview in the unfinished space. It's a really neat way to have an interview. And I apologize in advance for the sound quality. My mobile recording gear is what you might call adventurous. Okay, so I'm excited to share the interview, but first, a couple of things. Your hemp permit, your Pennsylvania hemp permit has to be in, received by the state by April 30th, because after May 1st, they're not accepting any new applications. So if you want to grow hemp and don't have a permit, you got to get on that. Okay, and the second thing, speaking of the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture, I am scheduling an interview with a few of the folks up there who are involved in the hemp program. So if you have questions for the PDA, send me your questions. Send them to podcast@lancasterfarming.com. You ask me, I'll ask them, and then we'll have a podcast where we hear the answers. Okay, stay tuned for the interview in the Hemp House on Wheels. Welcome to the Lancaster Farming Industrial Hemp Podcast. Could you introduce yourselves for us?
Sure. Hello, my name is Anastasia Konopitskaya, or Oberholzer. I'm an architect licensed here in Pennsylvania. I was trained in New York. I got my degree in New York, and I worked in New York and Los Angeles. And we moved here, we made a leap here back to Pennsylvania 6 months ago. We founded our company, and here we are building out of hempcrete.
Okay, and your husband is?
My name is Drew Oberholzer, and a few months ago we came up with this crazy idea together and to build a hemp house on wheels. And we've joined forces with Cameron, Coexist, and Amerishandra, and we're having a great time.
So yeah, I'm Cameron McIntosh, also in looking into building in hempcrete, and sort of was drawn together to Drew and Anna by the PA Hemp Industry Council folks, Jeff and Erica. And Drew and Anna actually reached out on their own. I had a lead that was coming up, and they offered their services. So I thought that was pretty nice. So when they made it back, we pulled together our resources. You know, we're all creatives, and it seems to have come together pretty nicely. It works pretty well. So here we are.
Cool. Can you describe what we're in right now?
So this is a former 18-foot long flatbed equipment trailer that we have converted to be a model for display of hempcrete construction designed by Anna. And it incorporates a timber frame, a traditional timber frame, just like you'd find on typical home construction.
It's not quite timber frame. Right. It's light wood frame construction.
The siding, drywall, insulation, house wrap have all been replaced by this hemp biocomposite insulation material. So we're in a partially finished version of what will end up being our sort of display model of what we do and how we do it.
Okay, so are these sort of like boards that are pressed and then attached, or you're putting it up almost like Adobe plaster?
These are cast. So hempcrete is sort of a misnomer. It implies a similarity to concrete, but there really isn't one. It's not structural. So you use slip forms. You make a form that is offset by whatever depth you want the casting to be, into which you pack the hempcrete manually. It's, you know, placed by hand, tamped, and then you move the forms up as you're working. And you can do that as soon as you're done packing. So it's cast in place, if you will.
Okay. Can you explain sort of the mixture that you put together with the hemp?
Sure, yeah. So it's pretty simple. It's water, the herd, which is the inner woody core of the hemp stalk. After you've removed the fiber, the seed, the oil, the flowers, you're left with what is essentially just, like I say, the inner woody core of the stem. It needs to be free of dust and fiber as much as possible. Then you combine it with a lime-based binder. So it's primarily lime, but there are also other additives to it, metakaolins and other things called pozzolans that help it to be hydraulic set. So once you add the water, it gets hard. And it continues to carbonate over time. So it actually gets harder and harder. It's mold, mildew, rot, fire resistant. I mean, it's fantastic, fantastic building material. And for every great save the planet reason to use it, there's another incredible building property. So it's a very versatile material.
So what drew you all to hemp in the first place? Why hemp?
When Anna and I were living in California, we were building guest houses and single family homes, and we're looking at some prefabricated options. And the only thing that we could find, from other people that were sort of building prefab were sort of the poly-extruded foam, and we just feel like that wasn't a good option. It's toxic, and I just, we just kind of by mistake came across hempcrete while we were looking for more natural building materials. And, that was about a year and a half ago, and we just kind of went down the rabbit hole and just contacted anyone and everyone who had anything to do with hempcrete and hemp as a building material, and when we sort of saw that the farm bill was going to potentially pass and things were looking good in Pennsylvania, and also being from here, we're like, let's buy a farm, let's start doing this, and we moved, and we're just amazed at the potential of hemp as a building material, not just for hempcrete, but also other things that it can be used for.
And also, being in the profession of architecture, you constantly see how much toxic materials how many toxic materials are going into the building and how many are going out. And I was working on the airport building, Terminal 4 in Los Angeles, and they would do renovations on a cycle, a certain, let's say, 8 to 10 years, they would tear down everything what they had there and they would bring in new materials, and everything in this giant terminal would go into a landfill. And thinking about how much of that goes back into the into the earth, that's not going to decay for another, maybe ever, just kind of made us think about maybe there is another alternative, maybe there is something that's better to manufacture and something that can decay eventually. So that's what led us to search for different materials.
Is designing with hemp different as an architect? Like, do you have different considerations that you have to think about?
Definitely. First of all, the wall thickness is different, so you definitely have to accommodate that. But also you have to pre-plan all your utilities that go into the building. So the pipes, electric, Depending on if you put hempcrete on the ceiling or on the floor, that also has an effect. So you definitely have to pre-plan all those elements of the building. And then in the future too, let's say it's going to affect how you're going to change that layout. Let's say if you need to move something, that you have to think about how to do that as well. But yeah, you definitely have to think a little bit more before you finish your design, or before, while you're doing the construction documents.
So we're sitting next to a giant stack of hemp in bags over there. Where did that come from, and how much is there?
So we got it from Europe, mainly because the hemp herd right now at this point, it's uniform, it's better. You can get it here, but there's a little bit too much fiber in it, which isn't the best for hempcrete. But so eventually, hopefully with the hemp train that's coming to Pennsylvania, we'll be able to buy everything in Pennsylvania. But we have over 1,000, I think it's 1,024 bales of hemp herd, and for various projects that we're going to be doing here on the farm, retrofitting a few buildings, and also making some of our products.
34,000 pounds, manually unloaded.
So what other products are you looking at making?
One of the reasons why I found, the way that I found hempcrete was as a potential substrate for planter boxes. I have a degree in ceramics, and I had been working for a native plant nursery for the last 7 years. Before this, and when I came back, I did the apprenticeship at the Moravian Pottery and Tile Works in Doylestown. I learned how to make handmade tile, so I kind of drew all those things together and said, wouldn't it be great if I made planter boxes featuring native plants with handmade tile, because there's an appetite for handmade tile in Bucks County thanks to Moravian. So the first one I ever made out of concrete was ungodly heavy. I mean, it weighed close to 200 pounds, and it wasn't very big. So I started looking for a potential substrate that I could replace the concrete with, stumbled upon hempcrete, and thought, hey, that'd be great. And I had the same reaction a lot of people have, which is, oh, you can use it in place of concrete. You really can't. So we've tweaked, our recipe to be conducive to making planter boxes that can sit outside. Planter boxes,
bricks,
yep, for building materials.
Candle holders, we're experimenting with different scale as well. So candle holders are pretty small. This is medium size, this is larger. And of course, this is also small, even on the construction side, this is small, so you can even go bigger.
And we're also looking to incorporate hempcrete, into a design feature in a space that isn't necessarily part of a, it could be an accent wall or something like that in like a gym or restaurant, that sort of adds to kind of the wellness component of a commercial space.
But isn't structural.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to find ways to bring the material into people's, knowledge. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And so that they can, number one, get familiar with it, but also start to reap some of the benefits from it. I mean, there are environmental benefits to the living environment, not just to the environment as a whole. Humidity control, the lime in the wall as it's passing that vapor actually ionizes the air, so it's healthier. And hemp herd in general is very antiseptic sterile or
antibacterial.
Yep. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. There's lots of applications medically even that people are looking at using hemp herd because of those properties. So imagine having it in your living space as opposed to all of the petrochemical sealants and house wraps and all the petrochemical everything plastic around
fire
you.
Retardants on furniture.
Yep.
That's right. And we also experiment with other products as well, not only hempcrete, but products that involve hemp. So we're making sound panels that go on the wall or ceiling, which will be featured in this house on wheels as well on the ceiling, and then a couple of other products made out of textile. And then we'll be growing hemp in our field, and we plan to use that hemp grown on our field for further experimentation.
Nice. Now, how many acres is that field there?
The field is about 6 acres. So we're gonna do about two acres of hemp, so we can grow it every year.
Okay.
And we'll just rotate it in.
Right. Did you get your permit for this year?
Yeah. So we have a permit, and then also we. Because of all, you know, all of this is very new, we also want to explore different methods of readying.
Finishing the crop, yeah.
And
so the old process, would you just lay it in the field for a few weeks? You're going to
you can lay it in the field, or you can do a standing ret and let it stand over winter.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, sort of the fiber on the outside actually kind of almost falls to the ground, and all the nutrients kind of go back into the soil, and it exposes the woody core. So we just want to see what method might work best for what we're doing.
Right. And end product, from what we've learned, is what drives your finishing method, you know, whatever you're trying to grow for. You know, and for us, and for many industries, I think, that are going to be up and coming in the more industrial fiber side of things, a shorter fiber is okay. So you're not looking for that long strand fiber for textiles necessarily, because that's competing with countries like China that are already kind of on top of that.
Okay.
So all of the short chain polymer plastics and, you know, replacements for single use plastics will come from that shorter fiber.
Okay.
So a lot of people talk about dual cropping. It's very difficult to do that because one finishing method sort of dictates what the product of the other is going to end up being like. So it's not as cut and dry as hempsters like to make it out to be, you know. So that's what, you know, that's what their focus is here, is to really try and focus in on what is conducive, what finishing methods are conducive to what we are trying to do, building with the material or, you know, some of the other potential applications.
That's the cool thing about seeing this industry sort of rise up. You know, you have so many different options and different methods. So you think you would process with the hemp train up in York, or what's your...
Possibly. We want to see what their end product is before we do something like that. But we're optimistic.
So you wouldn't do that processing here? Like, let's say you read it over the winter, and then would you be able to process the herd here? Or you would need mechanical help?
We would need mechanical capability to do that.
It's one of the many irons we have in the fire. Right. Kind of trying to think of,
and again, that's why we're only doing 2 acres, you know, rather than throwing in 100 acres of hemp, not knowing what we're going to do with it. So, you know, we want to start small and experiment and see what works, and then we can scale.
What's the name of your company?
Our company is Coexist Build.
Coexist Build.
And then we're in a joint partnership together, and my company is Amerishandra. So yeah, we're sort of the building aspect, you know. So we came together to offer full design build capabilities. So with Anna being an architect, very valuable, obviously, and actually sets us apart from, you know, most everyone else that's building in hempcrete right now.
So how much hemp would it take to make this thing we're sitting in now?
So this structure consumed about 18 bales of hemp. Anna did a calculation, if you want to share that, for the volume displaced by the framing.
Oh, yeah. Framing, so we did 16-inch on center, right?
Yep.
Yeah, 16-inch on center. So after we did the calculation for how much hemp it would take before we poured it in, and then after we did it, we realized that structure took 30%. So basically, if it's 16 inch on center, it's 2x4, then it's about 30% of the structure,
Can structure. You put that amount of hemp into acreage for me? Like, what would it take to grow this building?
We're not completely sure yet.
It's another,
honestly, it's another thing we want to experiment with.
Yeah.
And again, varietal, you know, of hemp really drives that. Are you working with, you know, one of the really tall fiber varieties? How densely did you plant it? I mean, there's so many things that go into that. There's lots of information historically on the poundage of fiber that you get out of a hemp crop, but historically the herd was left in the field. So this is why in Kentucky in particular, there's a great book, The History of Hemp in Kentucky, I believe. One of the reasons why hemp is touted as having this great regenerative effect on the fields is because traditionally they used to leave that herd in the field. So the foliage would fall, the herd was left in the field, all they were taking was the fiber, the root material was left. I mean, so much was left that it took very little input. There was very little slope off on production on a piece of land over a very long time, as opposed to other crops with, corn and tobacco just drain the soil completely, so that's one of the reasons why. And it's another reason why it's kind of difficult to extrapolate what we'd love to know. We want to know how much acres we're sitting next to right now in the form of 1,000 bales, but
have you chosen varieties for this grow this year?
We just have one variety. Getting a fiber variety is still a little difficult, just because the DEA and customs, haven't really, they're still operating on the 2014 Farm Bill, so we didn't want to order anything from Europe, not knowing whether or not we could actually get it out of customs. So the variety we're using is Fiber Nova. It's an Italian variety, but we got it from Kentucky.
Have you gotten the seeds yet?
We have the seeds, and we, I know that Rodale Institute grew this variety. I believe it did well. I'm not sure if it was last year or the year before, but yeah, next year we'll probably do more than one variety.
Okay. Cool. What else do you want to tell me? What should I know? What should listeners know?
Well, I think the objective of the Hemp House on Wheels is really to kind of use this to tour the I-95 corridor from Boston to D.C., Philadelphia, New York, to really bring this to the forefront of essentially, over 50% of the population of the U.S., to demonstrate that it's a viable alternative for people. We believe that it's easier to understand this as a building material if you can touch it, if you can smell it, if you can sort of experience it. So we want to use this space essentially as an experience for people.
So it's like a teachable moment on wheels.
Yeah, and then also a marketplace. We're accepting sponsors to feature people's products. We're going to be at the end of May. We've been invited to participate in the space at the Pennsylvania Hemp Industry Council, at the Cannabis World Congress and Business Expo at the Javits Center in New York. And then we'll use that as a launching point to, go to other festivals, expos, and things like that.
I also wanted to mention why exactly, what else is driving us to pursue this method of construction. If you think about the traditional architecture, or at least here in the U.S., you have layers and layers and layers of petroleum-based products. Drywall is not, but drywall is also not very healthy to manufacture. It's okay when it's dry on the wall. But you have insulation, you have plastic on the outside, you have vapor barrier, which is plastic, you have siding, which could be aluminum or could be plastic. And it's in hot temperatures outside, it emits all kinds of chemicals. And being wrapped, sitting in a cube wrapped with plastic just cannot be healthy. It probably is not. And in this this kind of assembly here, we don't have any petroleum-based products at all. So it just feels healthy, it breathes, manages the temperature inside, it helps. You do need to use a little bit of cooling and heating. but it manages the moisture control, moisture content inside of the house. So it's a very, very healthy way of building your house. And we want to spread the word about that, that what if you take those layers of plastic, remove it, and what's left? You have your wood frame, and then you put this material, which is grown in your field. So basically, we strongly believe in this kind of system, and we want to let people try it, and we want to encourage people to think about alternatives, thinking about outside of the box a little bit, outside of the vinyl box.
And I think similarly, you know, as, you know, maybe 20 years ago, people thought organic was crazy compared to conventional, but now, you know, it's become accepted and people are really considering what they're putting in their bodies. So we would really just like people to reconsider what they build their homes out of and where they want to live, because you spend 90% of your life in a building. And if you can control that environment, you'll be healthier as a result.
They're concerned about what they're putting in their body, but they need to be concerned about what they're putting their body in.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's good way.
That's right. People used to think that organic wasn't necessary, and maybe 40, 50 years ago it wasn't. But the world is changing; it's becoming more and more contaminated. And if we can help ourselves to make ourselves feel better and be healthier, why not try and do that? At least think about it. You know, we don't want to make anyone jump into this and spend their money on something they're not sure about. We just want them to at least hear us out and understand what it is that we are trying to bring.
And just like when you stepped in here, Eric, you could tell right away it was different.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's not even finished yet.
Yep.
You know, so imagine being in a house once it's completely finished. I mean, that's the goal of the Hemp House on Wheels, is to give people, like Drew said, that experience of stepping into it, breathing it, you know, living inside of it. And the difference is there instantly, you know, right away. And it's not a, you know, spiritual or, you know, ethereal kind of thing. It's very real.
So how do you get, you know, consumer demand to change? That's the trick, right? And that's where the answer to all of this lies, is getting enough people to sort of have that aha moment about hemp.
Well, people are selfish, you know, and when it comes down to it, you know, health-wise, I think, like Drew and Anna said, organic-wise, I mean, people are coming around to the idea of pay now for better food or pay later with your health, you know, and which one's more valuable. You know, the same can be applied to this, but that's why our focus now, we're not under any, you know, false illusion that overnight people will be demanding hempcrete construction, you know, especially as it's slightly more expensive at this point initially, not in the long run, but initially. But getting hemp objects into people's hands, into their houses, potential for retrofitting an existing space with the material so that you can start to feel it and understand it, and you don't have to bear the cost of building an entire house out of it. I think that is the phase shift that we're looking for, and that we know is not going to be immediate. We're very circumspect about that, so we're going to try everything else, you know, first to get it, you know.
And you know, the focus is on places that are already emphasize wellness. So just, you know, as you know, if you wanted to get organic, you had to go to a farmer's market or a health food store 20 years ago. But now, even places, I mean, I don't condone eating at McDonald's necessarily, but, you know, even places like that are coming around to the idea of organic, which is great. You know, we hope that building materials will move in that direction as well.
Not to be too cynical about it, but I feel like those big companies are involved because they realize they can make money at it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that goes along with the comment that I was making about people being selfish. Unfortunately, you as a young family looking to buy a house, your first house, you're not going to dive on a more expensive option, you know, even though it may be healthier. You're going to go with the you know, pick your palate sort of, you know, pre-built home. But, you know, I think we are all aware of that change occurring in America, where we're not so concerned with having the biggest possible house, you know, or the, you know, the most opulent spread of food. You know, people are more...
I think there's a new generation that sort of has a paradigm shift,
right,
almost built into them, maybe,
right,
hopefully.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Sometimes it's all about a trend and someone starting it. Sometimes that's the most important thing, that someone actually starts talking about it and then starts that wave going. And by the time it reaches the shore, it can, you know, sweep everything unnecessary.
Right. Yeah. No, very true. Yeah.
Well, I love what you're doing here. This is great. So thanks for having me out to the, what'd you call it, the Hemp House on Wheels?
That's right.
Yeah, it's a Hemp How. Abbreviation is House on Wheels is How. Hemp How.
All right, there you go. The Hemp House on Wheels. Thank you very much to the folks at Coexist and Amara Chandra for having me out to the farm and letting me check out the house. I'll have links to all their stuff on the Lancaster Farming page for this show. Also, check out photos on my new Instagram feed, LF Podcast Hemp. All right, that does it for me. My name is Eric Herlock, digital editor at Lancaster Farming. This podcast is copyright 2019 Lancaster Farming, which is part of the Steinman Communications family. Any music you hear is courtesy of Tin Bird Shadow. Okay, until next time, I'll see you in the newspaper.